Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Tommy Champion is an American genre-fluid music producer, songwriter, instrumentalist, and sound designer known for crafting immersive sonic worlds alongside his collaborators. Tommy's work is rooted in a deep adaptability to his artist's creative rhythms and vision. Tommy earned a bachelor's in music and philosophy at Davidson College in 2017 and a master's in contemporary performance from Berklee College of Music in Valencia, Spain in 2018. Now based in New York City, he works primarily out of the Carriage House and serves as a creative director, head writer, and head producer for Honeybee Publishing. Since co-founding the Carriage House Studio in Manhattan in January 2024, Tommy's career has expanded into exciting new territory. Originally recognized for his work in the Nashville indie and folk scenes, producing records for artists like Melanie McLaren and McClendon, Tommy's move to New York City has seen him evolve into a sought-after producer and engineer in the rap world. He has collaborated with ASAP Ferg, Trey the Truth, KC, Sign Crushers Motorist, Villa Beats, Joy Anonymous, Kenny Hoopla, and many more. Tommy's sound is defined by his relentless curiosity and love of sonic exploration. Whether building gritty textures with modular synths or capturing the warmth of red tape machines, he immerses himself in every detail of the production process. His technical expertise and instinct for innovation allow him to seamlessly cross genres, producing everything from rap anthems to apocalyptic indie rock to experimental pop. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Tommy Champion.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me, Barrett. I'm currently actually in Connecticut. I'm at my childhood home about an hour outside of New York City where I typically live and work.
At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be in this creative world. And how did that journey progress?
That's a great question. It was very early for me. I lucked out that I have a mother who was who's an actress and singer. And so she was doing a lot of different shows, jazz gigs, off-Broadway plays when I was growing up. And so I was lucky to be around that a lot. But I remember specifically at the age of six, my brothers had one of those tiny little portable DVD players. Mm-hmm. And they got their hands somehow. They're older than me. I have two brothers who are 4 and 6 years older. They had their hands on Zeppelin Live in Europe in 77 on DVD. And I remember us sitting around this tiny screen and me watching Jimmy Page come out with the double neck guitar. And I remember thinking that these are the coolest guys I've ever seen in my life. And I need to figure out how to do that.
And this may be a rhetorical question because you've already gone in the path that you have been. Do you think if your mother had not been in the industry, you still would have landed up in it?
It's a great question. I think I would have become a creative or a creator of some sort. And I think that's also sort of how I'm trying to think more broadly about what I'm doing. Although it's focalized right now in music specifically, like the process of getting better at music has brought me back to lots of other artistic endeavors. And recently, even that's been like filmmaking and photography and editing videos and just kind of seeing what else could exist out there in creative realms. So I think had I not had a mother who introed me that so young, I probably maybe would have gone really into like maybe just art, you know, making art in class and school, and could have ended up back at music. But I think I would have ended up at something in this world because I think it's just how I'm wired.
Okay, so you realize at six that these guys on the DVD were the cool ones and you wanted to be like them. So how did that concept, image, and thought concretize into you actually doing it?
Well, over many years, I think it's like any, and it's still going to be many years. I think it's one of these ones where in any creative work, you never really arrive. You're just kind of constantly on that journey. And when you are thinking about arriving, then you're no longer on the journey, you know? So I think there's so many different moments that have helped me come back and focalize and get really serious and specific about what I'm doing. I'll give you a recent one. You know, I've been working in New York for the last 2 years. I moved up from Nashville, where I lived for 4 or 5 years working down there. in New York, I've actually been able to start a studio that lets me work with people in like every genre imaginable, and not just Americans, but people from the UK, from France, from all over the world who are coming through. And that producing and writing with other people in genres that I never even knew existed has just brought me back to, again, wanting to focalize even more on, at the moment, my artistry. And for a while, I'd sort of put aside the idea of even being an artist. I just thought maybe I'm more of a writer producer. But through the experience of being shown so many other cool styles by so many people who are better at those things than me, it's kind of brought me back to, especially in this last year, realizing that I want to do all of this and want to continue and continue to grow and just develop this career.
So how long was the pause between you actually creating for yourself, then you were just producing and writing for others, and then deciding in the last year that you want to do more for yourself? Was it a long gap in between those two periods?
It kind of was, because I started off, once I finished up school, I was pretty sure, I was like, I'm going to be an artist. Like that's going to be my main thing. I'm going to focus on Tommy Champion's music, and I'm going to really lean into that through and through. But that was sort of right around the time I put out my first project, was 2018, 2019. And then when the pandemic hit, it really changed the landscape of what musicians were doing. And so I kind of retreated more internally and really worked on what I needed to get better at in the studio, which was production skills. Because I'd played a lot of guitar up until that point, like I had in a lot of bass and a lot of other instruments, but I lacked the ability to actually produce really well and to do it myself. So I started doing that. And as a consequence, I got clients that wanted my kind of the sound that I was getting for their projects. Once that started moving, I was really like happy making other people's stuff. And it kind of took a little bit of the focus off of how difficult it was for me to make my own projects at certain points in life. You kind of go through those mental blocks, those creative blocks, and different moments of self-doubt. But producing for other people at least was still moving toward the target and just really, frankly, tying up these strengths. So what ended up happening the last year was after all these amazing things happened in New York, I kind of had a moment to breathe. And I kind of went back to these songs I'd shelved for a very long time that I'd wanted to put on an album and never did. And it was, again, self-doubt, lack of belief, but there was also some truth in the fact that I wasn't really a good enough producer 5 years ago to make them the way I'd heard them in my mind. And then it kind of stuck to me, or came to me one day that I was like, when I was hearing in my head what it could be, I was like, I know how to do that. And so I really kind of pulled the cable out, and I had an opportunity to leave New York for 3 weeks and go to a friend's remote house up on the lake in Vermont. Completely alone for 3 weeks, all my guitars, all my crazy synths you can see behind me, and just did the 12 hours a day on all the songs that I needed to do. I knew that it would require me to like isolate and to take away all distractions in order to do that, because I'm kind of a one man, for the most part, a one man show when I'm in the studio.
Do you not feel or believe that another producer would have realized those visions of how you wanted the songs to be 5 years ago?
It's a great question. You know, I kind of found that a little bit in my friend McClendon. So he's another artist that's Nashville based, and he was in New York too. But he and I worked very heavily together on his project where I was helping him produce and write some of his last album, The Garden. Really cool kind of psychedelic indie rock, but there's a good pop undercore. Nice kind of mix of like Bon Iver and I don't even know, like the Blue Nile or something. It's just a whole really cool sound. So he actually has come back and has co-produced a few of the ones that we wrote from that era. I took more of the lead with it. But I think at that time, I wasn't around people too much who heard what I was going for. And it made sense where we could collaborate on such an intense project. I think that was the other thing, is like it's budget restrictive too. It's like my sound, for example, what I'm doing is a bit more of like a modern wall of sound. Like I'm trying to take the ideas that Phil Spector put into the 60s, 70s recording process. But how do we do that in 2025 when we have nearly infinite amounts of track limits in a DAW like Logic Pro or Pro Tools without it being too much? It's like, how do we make tasteful maximalism? So you can see that the mechanic of me doing hundreds of layers of, you know, synthesizers of guitar parts of pianos and this and that takes time. And were I to outsource other people, it'd be really expensive, which is actually a beautiful thing because the budget then forced me to realize, all right, I got to get better myself. Like I can't just rely on teammates for these grandiose projects, but not be pulling the majority weight.
And also, do you feel potentially the busyness of doing and creating and writing for others was also a distraction and allowed you to potentially procrastinate in recording your own stuff?
Yeah, no, I mean, it definitely, there's tons of ways to look at it that way. I think shoulda, woulda, coulda is one of those really tricky things for any artist or really anyone, you know, in life as you reflect on what could have been. I think in some ways, I feel like I don't want to say I wasted the last 5 years, but I feel like I probably should have had a different viewpoint on my own self-confidence, what I was able to do, even if it would have been slightly incorrect. I think it's better to go 100 miles an hour and hit a wall than it is to go like two or three and, you know, take the safe journey. I think it's much easier to just go and make a mistake and then you turn left or you turn right and eventually you find your way out of the forest. And I found that since I moved to New York, the pace was 20x what I was doing in Nashville. And that was really good for me because it picked up like the importance or kind of like the fact that this time's dwindling. We got to roll. Yes, in a sense, there was a little bit of a distraction with it, but I came away with a really great network of people and so many different nights and days, every freaking day where I was making a new song, writing and getting those skills down of like, hey, nice to meet you. Who are you? Where are you from? What do you do? What vibes do we want to do today? All right, cool. And 3 hours later, we're walking out of there with like a song that's done. And I could not have done that 8 years ago. I mean, the idea of finishing a song in 3 or 4 hours on a computer would have been just baffling to me because I was coming from it from a musician standpoint of like jazz band, guitar player kid. I was in rock bands, had no idea what was possible on the computer. So I had to immerse myself in really the skills of what people are doing technologically to catch myself up, because I think I'd focused so many years in my younger years on like playing and being a good player. And then I realized that that takes you to a certain spot. But production mixed with playing and performance allows you to really do kind of everything under the sun in the music world.
You referenced that you dove into the production world to learn more, and then other people wanted you to produce them because they were loving what you were doing. Were you surprised that other people wanted you to produce for them, or it was just the foundations and groundwork that you built that allowed the reputation to go out there?
I think I was lucky that, you know, I had some key early collaborators who heard the potential of what I was doing in my very first artist project back in 2018 and 19. Even if I felt not so great about it, maybe at the time that they were asking me to work on it with them on their things, but it did show kind of what I was going for, you know what I mean? And so I think that was really cool. And then I was lucky that just interactions with like playing live with people and doing songwriting sessions, like I learned in Nashville. My first year I got there, I met a guy named Bart Herbison, who runs the Nashville Songwriters Association. And I think he used to be Johnny Cash's manager or something. But he's an old school country guy and really cool. And just one of those guys that when he walks in the room, you kind of sit up straighter just because he just commands respect. And I was like 22 or whatever when I got there. And I was like, what do I do? Like, how do I break in here? And he goes, go write 100 songs with 100 other different people, not just yourself, and then come talk to me. And he goes, 90 of them will be terrible, 5 will be good, and 5 will be great. And the network you'll build from that will have jumping off points and there'll be a lot more action. And so that's what I did. I just like in between all my gigs at night during the day, I would just do writing sessions with whomever. I would meet at these songwriting things and this and that. But I soon realized that because I could play guitar well and I also could kind of produce, I could make the demos in the room for people. So I started to make the demos for the songs we would write, and then those would get heard by other people, et cetera, et cetera. So I was trying a lot of different ways to go that route, but I was lucky that, again, just moving forward brought about results rather than like, let's put up a flyer or something else. Mm-hmm. Like I just did work and then people wanted to work.
It's again, you referencing what's important in any industry for any person is that technique of networking, just going out there, saying yes. It's about saying yes, pitching up and saying, okay, whatever this interaction, whatever this experience brings, who knows? But it's just about pitching up, saying yes. And for introverts, people like I am, when there are lots of people just pushing yourself out there and like saying, hey, I'm so-and-so. What do you do?
Yeah. It's hard, right? What do you do to kind of combat that? Like, so you clearly have natural introvert tendencies. How do you constantly battle that internal impulse?
Well, you see, the thing is for me was I've done over 400 interviews now. I sort of go, I go into my host mode and I love asking people questions about who they are and what they do. So I allow the attention and focus to be on them and just to hear their stories. And then that's how I allow myself to come out of that introverted mode.
That's so true. And everyone always likes to have good questions asked of them, especially when you're meeting someone for the first time. So it's great advice because so many artists too, particularly in my world, including myself, I'm probably more of what they call an ambivert, which means I can kind of chameleon depending on the situation, but I lean heavily introverted. But I know it is hard for a lot of artists because it's like, this isn't what we do. We're not businessmen by nature, but at least with other creatives, it's not hard. That's what I've liked. Just like in New York, there's such an art world. So like, it doesn't feel networking. It just feels like you're talking to another person that is interested in the same things for the most part.
You referenced earlier that you were embracing and creating in multiples of different genres. So when a new genre came into the room, how did your creative brain adjust to that genre? Was it quite quick because you had built up foundations in other genres? Or did it take you a while to wrap around that specific one?
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones, as I've gotten older, I've just realized how incorrect my assumptions and beliefs were when I was younger. You know, like you just continue to get shown that you were what you thought once was incorrect. And I think for a while, especially kind of coming from the jazz rock world, I had certain beliefs about certain genres that were like, oh, these aren't as quality as other ones. They're so easy to make. Anyone can make them. You know, you hear the same arguments for modern art and things like that, too. But what's great is when you actually put in the room and it's like, hey, can you make a bass sound like that? Can you actually make that like a crazy house type kick? Or like, can you make that work in that capacity? You start to swallow a little bit and you realize, yeah, maybe I don't have that. Maybe there actually is a whole other art or skill here that I've ignored. And let's dial into that. So, because basically what's happened to me in New York is I met a guy who's got an amazing property. This house in Manhattan, his name is Gordon, and we came up with this idea of sort of creating a residential studio because it has so many bedrooms and stuff, so artists can come stay from wherever. And because of the weird Airbnb laws in New York, Gordon actually lives on premise, so he's able to rent that out, and we're able to bring in artists, teams, producers, writers to come stay and work there across multiple floors. Once we started that concept and started building that and seeing who was coming through, I knew very quickly that like beginner mindset was going to be really crucial here for working with new people. I think it's about connecting with the person first. Like in a session, what I try to do is just meet someone, chop it up with them a little bit, you know, just do that kind of background thing, get to just suss out kind of like where they're at energetically, what they're about. I'll usually ask, can you play me some stuff? What have you been working on? What's been moving you? What have you been gravitating toward? And then during that, you can clock a lot. You know what I mean? So like, I think good producers generally can kind of feel where something is sitting metronomically, even without, you know, like, oh, it's in the 120, 130 realm. Okay. This is sort of an offshoot of house, or, hey, this is like a different kind of like IDM jungly type thing. Or you start to notice characteristics, or this is just a straight folk song. Right. And so then I'm kind of thinking about what instruments I have around, like, what could I contribute? Where would I be useful? And then from there, usually start an idea. And that could be me having a bunch of pre-prepared ideas to show them, or us starting from scratch, or they maybe even have a song that they're like half writing and they're like, hey, you would be great to work on synths and guitars and XYZ in this context. But I usually try to be very low key with it at first, because more often than not, if you have someone coming in who's very into a specific genre, they know a lot about it. And so, again, I'm not the expert in that situation, but what I do know well are like instruments and things like synthesis. So I quietly, what I love to do is actually, even when I'm in these rooms, if I'm on the computer, if I'm not writing with somebody, I will get other instruments with my headphones and start preparing ideas without bothering them. Because one of the things I realized pretty young is like, as a guitar player, the most annoying thing you can do is just noodle in the background while you're in a room with like other people either working or doing other stuff. Like my brothers used to laugh with me, just like, shut up. You know, you're constantly playing. So same thing in a writing room. You really do not want to be noodling while somebody's working on drums or something like that. You got to be quiet and you got to be low key. So I'll do things like this, for example, which is like an OP1 field. And it's a combination synthesizer, sampler, drum machine, and kind of digital tape machine. So like, I'll very often kind of see what BPM they're working at, kind of listen. And with my headphones, I'll start working on ideas down here, even record my guitars, my bass or whatever in here. And then maybe at like an appropriate moment, if I feel like there is something to add, I'll slowly press play and kind of sneak it in with a mix of what they're working on. And if they say, if their head turns and goes, whoa, what is that? That's great. Record it in. I go, good. And if they say nothing, you kind of know, turn it back down and try something else, or just see what else you can do. So I think it's a constant, it's like a game of psychology in a way. You're trying to read people and understand their backgrounds and not intrude, but like add if you can, you know, that's how I look at myself in those situations.
I'm sure you've worked on a lot of the genres now, being doing it for a while. Also, when you are fresh to a genre or a type of thing, they're fresh ears, fresh eyes. So having that compared to a person who's produced hundreds of the same thing, you might bring a different ear or eye or angle to it that might not necessarily have been there if from someone who'd done it 5,000 times.
Completely. Yeah. No, like, I mean, that's a great example. Like one artist I was working with a lot, his name is KC, K-A-Y-C-Y-Y. There's been tons of, you know, Kanye songs, Travis Scott, A$AP Rocky, Rihanna, just amazing artists. And one of these guys who's really inspired me and showed me kind of how to work at that level. But one reason that we worked well together is that he has a good ear for cool sounds and things that could work in different ways. And so when I was doing the weird stuff on modular synthesizers, or I was taking tape loops and half speeding them and saturating them or destroying them, but doing it in kind of musical ways, a lot of people might be like, you know, this is not part of that world, but he always had the ability to be like, that's so cool, let's put that in. He could always kind of hear where there was moments of something unique or a flavor and incorporate in that world. And so that's always fun to get that kind of feedback, where things that are so more or less normal for me now become totally new, contextualized in a new genre or with a new artist behind it.
The difference between producing, creating for yourself and when you create for others, when you do it for yourself, is it mainly you in your own world, tunnel vision? And then when you're with others, you sort of like encapsulate, if that's the correct word, or envelop into their world. What other differences are there?
Yeah, I think, well, you described it perfectly off the bat. I think the biggest thing is there's less pressure when you're, if it's like, if you're not the primary artist on something, but you're a writer and a producer, artists, you know, have to sort of bear the brunt of releasing it, of being the face of it, of kind of, for lack of a better word, kind of mascotting that sound and that song and that thing for a long time. And so there's been times in my life where, you know, I've made something that for me, like, really emotionally gut punches me, or maybe sounds really intense, or has all the different extremities of like the human experience. And you can get scared by that. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's scary when you feel like you've hit something that is really beautiful or dark or sad or overly uplifting, or just something that feels too extreme. Cause you know, the culture wants us to sort of sometimes sit in these lines. It's nice to be able to be like, hey, I produced that, but that's your name on it first and foremost, and mine secondary. But again, I think that came out of like my earlier mid-20s, just like fear again around like being perceived and stuff about what you're making. And now more than ever, like I love music because it can give me the tingles down your back in a way that nothing else can, right? Like I can truly hit other sort of spiritual dimensions just through song. And always have since I was a kid. And so I want to participate in creating those transcendent moments. Now what's hard is my music, I think, is so focused on that kind of feeling. Like I want you to float. I want you to kind of have like a crazy catharsis. I want you to really see, feel like you just experienced a movie and a song, rather than just it being like, hey, this grooves, or this is a fun dance thing. Like I love making those things too. That's like a different type of functional music and something that with my production I get to do all the time. But I've used the artistry to be like, all right, let's lean into the more uncomfortable nooks and crannies of like what we feel as humans and artists. And for the first time, me not be like afraid to express that in my own way.
It's interesting you say that, because I speak to a lot of humans who, you know, there's NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and that's the way people process information. And a lot of people, when they hear music, they don't hear the lyrics. It's either about feeling or the picture they get. I often say to a person, oh, do you actually know what that song's about? And like, oh, no, I love the song. And then you tell them what it's about. And it's like, oh, I didn't realize it was about that. For you and what you just said, and wanting people to get that catharsis and that feeling and upliftment, and understanding that some people just don't even hear it, is it just in your understanding that they'll get it when they get it? Or does it bother you that people don't hear it the way you want them to perceive to be hearing it?
Well, I think it's a really great point too about that, like about lyrics and feeling the world. The album is such where it is about the sonic world, I think, first and foremost, and the lyrics are slightly secondary, but they're designed to be specific but universal enough that like I want people to insert themselves in that whole world and maybe see themselves from the perspective of the narrator. And I think also like I use a lot of stacks in my vocals, other male and female vocals. So it kind of creates this almost unison, like chorus sound where it's like, could this be the, from the perspective of, you know, a woman, from they, them, from a male, like you don't really know. And that's what I was going for. So if people don't feel it, for me now, when I was younger, that felt like a reflection of like, your music's bad, or like I made a failure as an artistic project. Now what I've realized is that everyone has taste, including me, like strong taste. And also everyone's at different places in their life energetically where things will and won't resonate with them. I could think of so many bands I couldn't stand 5, 10 years ago that now move me to a different level. And I think it's that speaks more to where I'm at than maybe necessarily the music. And I've been wondering this myself, is like, is there actually really, I think there is, but like in looser ways, is there really any bad art, or are we not tapped into that person's human experience? Mm-hmm. Like, are we not able to relate with it? Is it more of a sign that there's a division between our perspectives? And those things are good sometimes. We're going to have those. It's just natural. It's so nice when a new genre or a new style of music for the first time clicks for me. You know what I mean? When I'm like, ah, oh, God, I get it. I get what that's coming from now. And I think living and working with more people that make that stuff and hearing about their life experiences and getting to know them creatively and as people has helped me be more open. So it doesn't bother me too much now. I mean, at least I'm trying not to let it. We'll see how it all feels when it's coming out. But I know that there's a lot of people who've had massively profound like moments of catharsis with just some of the songs that I put out. And that alone's enough. And I have, you know. So at the end of the day, those are the two benchmarks. And I think I gotta go with, if it gives me chills down my spine, or at least for a certain period of time, then it's worth putting out.
Tell us more about the album. You've referenced a portion of it. Tell us more about it. It's coming out, you said, 7th of November.
Yep.
What else can you tell us?
Yeah, the first single came out in July, and then the next one August. So it's really exciting to just get this initially started. But the album, I think, falls into that kind of concept album world where, again, a lot of these were things that I had shelved because I kind of didn't believe in my sound for a long time. I didn't really believe in what I was going for. And it's always hard for an artist to describe it. And especially right now, if you know, you're listening to this and we're talking like what my sound is, but for kind of a short elevator's pitch point of reference, it sounds a little bit like, it sounds like 70s kind of psych rock, kind of like Pink Floyd meets almost like the Zeppelin ballads, where there's all those mandolins and bouzoukis and acoustic guitar, meets sort of like Todd Rundgren and Sufjan Stevens and like Beck. So there's this kind of merging of kind of soft psychedelic and art rock, but then a heavy emphasis sort of on folk instruments. I use a ton of acoustic guitars, baritone, Nashville high strings, bouzoukis, banjos, and I'm a boy from Connecticut. So it's kind of funny. It's like that mixed with modular synths and these really delicate string arrangements and things like that. It's really epic. It's pretty maximalist. It's about really kind of showcasing a lot of the sounds that I love and going for that wholeheartedly. I'm not into minimalism right now. You know, like I get to do that when I produce for other people. But I think it's a lot easier to be minimalist than it is to be maximalist right now. And that's a contrary thing because everyone's like, cut back ideas and this and that. And I'm like, no, I don't want a Bauhaus sculpture. I want another Acropolis. Like I want to see, that's what I want built. I'm interested in that again at this moment in my life, for me and what I'm building. And I'm seeing more of it right now, which is really cool. I think AI is pushing us toward people wanting stuff that's like incredibly wrought and hand worked. Like, have you heard of Quadeca recently, this artist?
Mm-mm.
He just made this whole visual album for his project. But anyway, crazy. It's a similar kind of world of just one guy kind of making like a really, really, really beautiful concept record that he poured his heart and soul into. And in a way, that's what I'm trying to do with this one. I'm trying to draw from a lot of different things. As a part of this whole thing, I too have been working and doing the art for it and creating the visuals, and I actually got to collaborate with these two cinematographers in New York, and we're creating a short film to sort of tell the narrative stories behind the album, because there's actually a really cool story that underpins a lot of it, dealing with my godfather, who was a Norwegian sea captain and used to be sea captain of cruise ships that would go all around the world. And I sampled kind of my last conversation with him where he talked about taking his ship into this, the most harrowing, treacherous Norwegian fjord called Trollfjord, with about 2 feet of width on either side, and doing a full 360 before coming out. And I used a bits from this voice memo, our last conversation before he passed away 7 years ago, inside this first single. And it's been really cool to hear something that familiarly or ancestrally or whatever has stayed with me, but then to put in a context that other people then are hearing these phrases about, you know, nothing's impossible. You know, when people land on the moon the first time, no one had been there before. These lines that he was saying hopefully can kind of echo in new capacities. So there's so much more to the story beyond that. But what it's allowed me to do is take this music, which is very maximalist, very big and huge, and actually for the first time score it against a film, which is something I've always wanted to do. I've wanted to score films. I've wanted my music in TV shows and films. I think it would do amazingly for the right shows. But it's a gate-kept world. It's a hard one to get into. And I'm not in LA. I'm in New York. So this was sort of my idea of, like, again, I don't necessarily have the budget to go hire someone to get, you know, figure all that necessary stuff out. But what if we made the art about making a film? And then I can score that, like, about the whole album, but with the songs from the album. And so that's been so cool as a process to just kind of, again, open up my mind to what's possible from, you know, went from kind of producer, writer, back to artist, to now getting to direct and write short screenplays, and who knows where else that'll open up for me. I just love that the album has opened so many doors just to the process itself, how much work it's taken.
Let's just say an Oscar. There we go.
Maybe one day.
So, Tommy, I love this game. Without any reasoning or thoughts, just top of mind as it flows through. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 hours, 10 years, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that. If you had to push play to five artists once we finish this conversation, who would those five artists be?
Very good question. And so I'm someone who focuses on something when I find it for a while as like a producer. Like I hear it 10,000 times because I want to like understand it. So my newest thing has been Wonder Horse, which is this UK group, this rock group. Amazing lyrics, great guitar playing. Again, it's nice to hear a band for the first time in a while that's like doing really good things. And they've been somebody I've been listening to a lot. I've also been listening to a lot of Modest Mouse. I've always loved Modest Mouse. I actually got to hear one of their records when I was like 6 years old from my brothers. God bless older brothers, right? They introduce you to cool stuff. But just been studying Cameron's songwriting. It's just unbelievable, his lyricism. Moving on from that, So at the house recently, we had the pleasure of hosting a release show for Little Sims, who's a UK rapper artist. And I am blown away by her artistry. Like her music, first of all, is unbelievable. But again, she's one of these superpower humans who also writes, directs, and shoots her own music videos. And if you've never seen them, when I first saw them, I watched 15 in a row. And I don't think I've ever done that for any other artist in my entire life. Like to sit there and watch 15 in a row is unheard of for me. So I was absolutely blown away by what she's doing. I think her music's awesome. And then I have also been kind of on a weird Ozzy Osbourne kick. And it was right before he passed, actually. And it was kicking back up for me. And then he passed and I was pretty bummed. But just been blown away by that guy, too. Someone who we sort of, I think 20 years ago, were laughing at a little bit culturally. You go back and see his canon of stuff. And I'm like, oh my gosh, so much current music traces its antecedents from what he had done in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And then fifth, I would say, let's get something a little bit different because I think I said mostly rock stuff here. I have also been listening to Jamiroquai, which is different. But I mean, obviously that's old, but Jamiroquai is one of the greatest electronic, you know, just groove groups of all time. I used to have to study their bass lines in my bass classes at school. I actually had a midterm exam where I had to play Canned Heat's bass line perfectly without messing up for 6 minutes straight because my teacher was like, "Lie, this is what you'd be expected to do, so you can't mess up once." But I've always had a very high bar and respect for that band.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.